Only two more weeks in Revelation. I know some of you are excited to know that. So today and next Sunday will be our final two messages from the book of Revelation. And then following that, beginning in the first Sunday in October, we'll be doing Immerse Beginnings. And so if you were here back in the spring, we did Immerse Messiah, which took us through the New Testament. Immerse Beginnings will take us through the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Same sort of thing. So we'll have available, supposed to arrive tomorrow, a copy of Immerse Beginnings. We did this back in 2019, I believe. So you may have a copy from a few years back, but we'll have additional copies available for you. And again, the format of this is very similar. And this is the New Living Translation. It's purely text of Scripture, but what it does is it removes the chapters and the verses and those headings that can kind of sometimes become speed bumps as we're reading and throws us off. And there'll be a reading plan along with it. And what we're going to encourage you to do is during the week is to read through that. And then on the following Sunday, I'll preach on a section of that passage that you've read. And so you'll get a chance to explore these beginning stories of the Bible and all that goes on in them. We have a couple Bible studies already, and we're working on scheduling some other ones, as well as I've shared that doing this in conjunction with some other churches in Muskegon that I'm in a prayer group with. And the exact format of that we're still working out, but hopefully maybe have some Bible studies along with them, and then some of their pastors on a couple of the Sundays will be here to preach instead of me, and I'll be at their churches preaching. And so that's kind of what that's going to look like. It's just a great way, and reading those large sections of the Bible can often help us see things that we miss when we read in small little sections. And so we'll be going from the end of the Bible back to the beginning of the Bible. But as we finish up our series on Revelation, we're in those final chapters, this picture of a new heaven and a new earth when God will restore and make all things new. And so a couple weeks ago, we looked at it's an embodied new creation, that we'll have physical bodies and a physical resurrection and what that means for us now and how we deal with our bodies. And that one of the key parts of the new heaven and new earth is God's perpetual presence with us, that God, we will be with God and we'll see him face to face, and it encourage us to live our life with God now. And so, as we've been thinking about it today, what I want us to think about is how this future shapes our life today. We've had a lot of stories. We're looking at all the images and trying to understand the images, but maybe not as much time in thinking about what does it mean for us today. And oftentimes, when we think of the future, all we think about, oh, it's something happening in the future. But the reality is that the future also affects what does it mean for a new heaven and a new earth and all that's going on in that. How does that affect the way we live today? What does it mean for us? Is it just something off distant in the future? We say, oh, at some point I'm going to be living in this wonderful garden city and in the presence of God, and there'll be people all around the throne from every tribe, nation, tongue, and people, and that's off sometime in the future. But does it make a difference to us today? And I think it does make a difference to us today, because if we think about the entire book of Revelation, Revelation, again, is an unveiling, God showing us the reality of what's going on behind. It's not about timetables and codes, but about what's going on, and it's about faithful living. That the book of Revelation begins with these messages to seven churches, and they're called to be faithful, to endure in the face of persecution, but also to avoid compromise. And at the center of all the vision of Revelation, kind of summarizing all, is a slaughtered lamb on the throne. That the lamb who was slain, that Jesus, his death, and his resurrection are at the center of that story. And that's important to remember, because that's way back in chapters 4 and 5 of Revelation. We're in 21 and 22. But it's a central picture, because the death of the Lamb has secured our future. When we think about this future of this new heaven and a new earth, it only comes about because of the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So we think about the past has secured our future. And the question then is, how does it call us to live in the present? And the word I've used frequently through the series is, it calls us to allegiance, to faithfulness to Jesus in the midst of it. So it's about how our future destiny affects life today. And there's a temptation to think of the future destiny, this life, I mean, it sounds great. This place where there's no more mourning, no more crying, no more pain, and it is going to be great. But we don't want to see this future vision simply as an escape from the world. Nor do we want it to be a picture of like, well, we're building our way there, because it can become one of those two things where we think, oh, it's this future thing, and isn't it going to be great? And then we just kind of endure and grit our teeth in the meantime. Or the other option is sometimes we think, oh, God's going to make it great, so we need to work really hard, and we need to build the kingdom here and now. But it's neither of those things. Instead, it comes back to a central theme of the book, and that's about witness. And this again goes back, this is a letter to seven churches, and the primary call is this word witness, which isn't a word we use often, but it's a word to describe this is what we're called to do, to serve as faithful witnesses, to be and look like Jesus and to remain faithful. To witness to the Lamb who was slain in his final victorious rule with peace, justice, life. And then to think about how does this future shape us now? So Adela Collins says it this way, the destiny of the world and even of the church is beyond human control. Saying there's nothing in the future. We can't control the future. It's beyond our control, but it is in control of God. But people can discern the outlines of that destiny and ally themselves with it. In other words, we can see where the future is headed, where God is taking the future, and we can line ourselves up with it. They, in other words, people can avoid working against it, and they can embody its values and witness to the world. So we think about what are the values that we see in this new creation, and how can we embody those now? So how do we witness to this final vision here and now, both in the things we say and the things we do? And how do we speak out against things that are counter to this new creation? So I want to look at a couple things. One is, in this vision, Jim read a part of that, and again, it's the whole of all of 21 and 22, we see that there are some people there. The ones, it says the angels, talks about a group of people who are there. And it says the glory and honor of the nation, It says only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life in chapter 21, verse 27. So there's a group of people there, only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And so we have a final justice of God. In the final justice of God, there are two sets of people. Those who live eternally with God and those who don't. And what difference does that make now? We say, well, that's great. That's going to be in the future. And some of us might be sitting here and say, well, I know where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in the city. I'm going to be in God's presence. But it makes a difference here and now. Why? What's the implication for us today is we're called to proclaim the gospel. I mean, if this is the final destination where there will be one of two places for people, in the presence of God or away from it, living in the city or not, there's one of two destinations. So what are we called to do now in the present? How does this future affect the here and now? It's calling us to tell people about the life, the death, the resurrection, ascension of Jesus, and the redemption he's accomplished. It's saying this is one of our fundamental callings. It's something we, the church, are called to do. It's one of the missions Jesus gave us. You know, he didn't say, go and build peace on earth. He said, what? Go and make disciples. So we're called to go and make disciples of people. And sometimes our problem is, our energy and our time gets consumed by so many other things. And I know what that's like. It's like I sometimes think and I look at my calendar, I look at my schedule, or I think back on my week, and I think, where did all my time go and where did it all go? And I think, wow, only if I had some time to share with Jesus about people. Share about Jesus with some people. And so, but why? Because my energy, my focus is often directed towards the wrong things. So one of the things we can begin to do is if we can begin to reorient and say, there is this future picture in our heads, and so how do I orient my time, my energy, my life, all my conversations, all my arguments to something that makes a difference in the future? Because we can get caught up in all kinds of things that matter only in the moment, all kinds of things that will pass away. And not all of those are bad things. We have our hobbies, we have our interests, we have books we read, shows we watch, conversations we have, and those are all important. But this vision of the final future says the most, or one of the most important things is that final picture of where people will be. And so we have to think about how we can make that a part of our story. How can we do a better job? And I say this knowing that it is one of the biggest struggles, not just for Fruitland Covenant Church, but for most congregations in the United States. Within our denomination, the Evangelical Covenant Church, we've, over the years, gone through different things, and one of them is talking about healthy missional markers was one of the ways they identified churches, and one of the healthy missional markers was sharing Jesus with other people. And consistently, it ranked as one of the bottom ones for almost every church. And so we need to think, how do we direct more energy to that? And one way is just think about what are the things you're currently doing and how do you involve those? If you like to fish, if you like to participate in other things, how do I take the time I spend doing other things and how do they make them about having conversations with people about Jesus? And sometimes you say, well, what am I going to tell them? You tell them about Jesus. You tell them the story of his life, his death, his resurrection, his ascension, and what it means to be saved. And to say, now I'm inviting you to live under him as king. And so some of it sometimes is just saying, how has it made a difference in your life? It's one of the best ways to say, once I gave my life to Jesus, once I decided to live under him as king, this is how it changed my life. You can talk to people about what are the false things that they're trusting in for salvation? Now, what are the things that they're turning away and say they're looking to them for salvation? And summoning people to say, like, you have to change the way you're living and you're doing it. And so this final picture, in part, is a call to preach the gospel. It doesn't say it right in those words, but as we see this final picture, it's saying, are we telling people about Jesus? How are we letting people know about Jesus? How are we playing our part to shape the future? We're not going to be the ones who brings the new Jerusalem down. We're not going to be the ones who plants the tree of life or the river flows. But one of the things we can do is tell other people about Jesus so that in that new creation we might see them and they might be there. And I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to you. Because it's easy. They're awkward conversations. They're difficult conversations. They sometimes can get hard because people don't like to hear things that sometimes people get in your face about it. But we say, you know what? This matters. And so we need to find ways to talk to people about Jesus and say, this is the good news of who Jesus is. This is the story of Jesus, and I want to share what it is. And again, often talking about how has it made a difference in your life? And then also to even begin to talk to people and say, even what Jesus did is more than just individual salvation. It's individual salvation, but it's more than that. God's making all things new. And that's one of these pictures that when we're talking about Jesus, this is what Jesus does. He not only heals individual people and saves them from their sins, Jesus' plan is to save all of creation. Jesus' plan is to heal the nations. You hear that language of the leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations. You see these pictures of the new Jerusalem with the gates are open and it says the kings are coming and going. If you read the rest of the book of Revelation, every time you hear about the kings of the earth, they're the bad guys. But now in this new creation, the kings of the earth are coming and going. In other words, there have been a group of people who have been reconciled to Jesus because what Jesus wants to do is more than just get some people to populate New Jerusalem. What Jesus wants to do is make all things new, to heal the nations, to reconcile all peoples. And so we need to preach a gospel that's bigger than just individual salvation. And we need to help people see false gospels, the way they look to other things for salvation. Maybe it's their status, maybe it's their self-worth, maybe it's money, sexuality, all kinds of things, and they look for those things as ways to begin to find meaning. Because when we talk salvation, another way to say it is, I mean, you might say, well, people I talk to, they're not looking to be saved, but they are looking for security and they're looking for meaning. They're looking for security and meaning, and that's what salvation's about. It's security for life. And so what are people looking to security for? What other things are they looking for to find security? What other things are they looking for to find meaning in their life? What are the ways that people think they know better than God? What are the other things that people are letting rule their lives? And so it's ways to have conversations. And I'll say this, sharing the gospel with somebody, sometimes we want to step it down. It's like, what are the four steps? What are the three things I need to say? Sharing the gospel with people is a series of conversations most of the time. Sometimes you're at that moment where they're ready and they're ready to take that step. But for the most part, sharing the good news of Jesus rarely takes place in the course of a three-minute conversation. Or if you happen to be the one who has that three-minute conversation, you have the chance to share the gospel with them, it's because they've had seven other conversations before that. So we need to think about, how can I be regularly sharing with people about who Jesus is and what he's done and how it's made a difference in my life and how it's going to make a difference for the world around us? So we're to share the gospel. That's the first thing. As we look at this picture, we share the gospel. But the second thing is, the vision of the future is also an invitation to how we live. And I'll say this. So here's this image in Revelation 21. It says, the city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives its light, and the Lamb is its lamp. And the nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. See, there's this picture of the kings. And so we might think, well, wait a minute, is there not going to be a sun and a moon in the new creation? And there's, remember, Book of Revelation is symbol. It's pictures. But it says what? That the light, the lamp that people live by is Jesus. And where else do we see that? We see it all through the Bible. This picture of Jesus as a lamp, and so it's the metaphor, and so the language there actually is, they will walk by its light. So 1 John, if we claim to have fellowship with him and yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not live out the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, purifies us from all sin. And so I think this final vision of Revelation is a picture of people walking in the light of Jesus constantly. In other words, what are they doing? They're living the way of Jesus. They're guided by Jesus constantly. They're not following other paths. They're not walking in darkness, which is an image of like, you know, if you want to do something and not be seen by people, when do you do it? Or where do you do it? In the dark, right? I mean, not literally, but it's a picture of what? We do things in the dark. I mean, crimes and stuff tend to happen where? In the dark or in dark alleys. Why? Because they're not seen. And so a picture of walking in the light is saying, I'm going to walk in the way of Jesus and be seen and walk and follow him. And one of the ways to think about it is to walk in the light of Jesus is it's all the time. And so there says, when it talks about they will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light and they will reign forever and ever. This picture of it's all the time. And what does that mean for us now? It means not living a divided life. It means all of life is devoted to Jesus. And there's a temptation sometimes to kind of chunk our life out in little bits and pieces. And in some cases there are, you know, we have kind of our work life, we maybe have school life, we have social life, we have all these different parts of life. Or maybe sometimes people, we have a spiritual life and we have a private life. And so what we can tend to do people tend to do is they kind of say, well, this is my part of my life that's for Jesus, and then I've got the rest of my life. And this works out in different ways. Sometimes it's just saying, well, you know, at church, I can live the way of Jesus. I mean, I understand I'm supposed to forgive people and I'm supposed to be generous, and that works with Jesus. But let me tell you, when I go to work, when I'm in my business, that Jesus way just doesn't work. We can say, well, that's the way of the world. Well, you know, I have to work in the way of the world because that's what it's calling me to do. But what Scott McKnight, I love this, he says, Babylon will never be the new Jerusalem. It cannot be Christianized. In other words, we can't live the way of Babylon. We can't live the way of the beast and also be a Christian. That we can't take the ways of the world and try and make them work for us. We can't have a split discipleship. We can't say, well, Jesus is for this part of my life, and the Constitution is for that part of my life. We can't say, well, love and forgiveness, that works over here, but over here I've got vindictiveness and judgment. We can't say, well, for this part of my life I'm going to live for the sake of others, and this other part I'm going to live for myself. We can't say, well, I have stewardship and service, and then over here is possessions and indulgence. We can't have a life where we're saying, well, it's okay to humanize, you know, Jesus calls me to humanize people, but, you know, sometimes it's necessary to dehumanize people and make them look bad. We have to ask ourselves questions like, what does it look like to walk in the light in a consumerist society? What does it look like to witness, to walk in the light in the midst of a society that is over-sexualized? What does it look like to live and walk in the light in a society that pushes violence? All these different things that go together. A society that degrades those who look or speak different. To witness in a culture of broken sexuality, a culture of abortion on demand, a culture that regularly encourages violence and hatred. And so when we look at this picture of this final thing of walking in the light of Jesus, where it's a day and night, so it's like there's no more sun, no more moon. In other words, what's it saying? The light of Jesus is the light all the time. And that means for us here and now is the light of Jesus, the way of Jesus needs to be our life all the time. We can't be dividing our lives up or deciding based on what works and what doesn't. It's kind of this ethic that says, well, you know, but that way of Jesus sounds really good. I mean, I really like when he said, turn the other cheek. I really like when he said, love your neighbors. I really like when he says, bless those who persecute you. That sounds really good, but you don't understand what I'm going through right now. You don't understand. It's like, well, I know I'm called to be generous, but there's, you know, and Jesus is saying, no. My invitation is to walk in my light all the time. It's an invitation to say to follow a slaughtered lamb in a culture that glorifies violence and often sees it as the only or best solution. I mean, we live in a world that so often, what's the solution? I mean, most often it's nations, it's empires. What happens most of the time when something goes wrong? Is it usually the rush to say, oh, let's go have a nice peaceful conversation and sort things out? The most often response of empire, and I use that word empire broadly to describe what is pictured here in the book of Revelation, often we call it Babylon, we call it the empire, is when something bad happens to us. You know, for Rome, it was, you know, something threatens us, what do? We marshal the legions and send them out. In today's world, when something happens to a nation, we think, well, there's something not going on, instead of that impulse to say, what's going on, and have the conversation about it. The almost immediate response is send out the carrier, send in the Marines, get the war machine revved up to go. And Richard Hayes says this. He says, a work that places the lamb that was slaughtered at the center of its praise and worship can hardly be used to validate violence and coercion. And so we have to think about, as people of the lamb, how do we live in a world where violence is so often the solution? And I'm not just talking nations. I'm talking within individuals. When something happens, and so often the response is, well, I'm going to get back at them. I'm going to return an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I'm going to return. And oftentimes it's not just an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. It's more like, I'm going to return life for an eye. I'm going to take whatever happens. And so there's these cycles of violence and this response that happens on. And so what we need to do is we need to think, how can we critique Babylon? How can we live this way? We live in a culture that uses wealth and power to oppress people. And how, as followers of Jesus, do we walk in the way? To be undivided is not to give ultimate allegiance to any political party. So I say this, there is no government on earth that is all good, and there's no government on earth that is all bad. And so again, going back to Scott McKnight, he says, one can trust that God empowers government. One can love one's country. One can be patriotic. One can vote and engage in the political process. And one can even serve in office. But that does not mean we bend the knee, casting our crowns before the government or declaring our allegiance. And so the phrase I've used before and I picked up from some other people is like, we serve a lamb, not an elephant or a donkey. In other words, we need to be, and so as we shape this, put it this way, we need to be careful of how we think and speak about Christians of a different political commitment. If we're walking in the light of Jesus. So do we, when we see another Christian, and so what makes a person a Christian? Is it being a Republican or a Democrat? Is it being a libertarian or some other party? What makes a person a Christian is their devotion, their allegiance to Christ. And so, but sometimes we get so caught up, our allegiance becomes to a political party, that we begin to question other people's faith. We begin to question other people's Christianity. We can think of them as unworthy, undeserving, corrupted, as deplorable. We may disagree on issues, a particular side, but they are still our brothers and sisters in Christ. And what it's reminded of, in the book of Revelation, we see this, there's a dragon, and the dragon loves division. The dragon loves to see the church split up. And I will tell you this, the division, going back to what did we talk about a little while ago, our witness to the world. Every time we split up and we start fighting with one another, it hurts our witness. When an outside world looks in and sees Christians lobbing stones, throwing grenades, hurling insults at one another, how much do you think they're called to say, wow, what a great God they serve? I want to be a part of that. And so we need to think, where is our ultimate allegiance and how does it shape the way we walk in the light of Jesus? And so we also live out our witness by living out the values and principles of the future kingdom now. And so we see this future kingdom here. And it's this incredible picture of what? There's a tree at the center of it, and there's a river flowing, and it says, for the healing of the nations. In other words, what is it about? What do we see in this final vision of Revelation? We see human flourishing. We see people living together. And so it might say, one of the things that we can live out the values now is to look and say, how can we promote human flourishing in the world in which we live? Many of you know I've been working with World Vision for a number of years now. And that's one of the things World Vision is committed to, is human flourishing, of bringing clean water to individuals. And we work as our denomination, we work in particular with Covenant Kids Congo, working in one of the poorest nations in the world, Democratic Republic of Congo. And to see the reports that come through when something as simple as that we take for granted as clean water, the difference that it can make in a community. That women, particularly women and children who are the ones who are having to gather water, are available now to go to school and to learn. When they're not getting water from a dirty pond, people are healthier and they grow. And so we think about how in this world can we say we see there's this final vision of human flourishing? Well, we live it out by what can we do to promote human flourishing right now? What can we do to promote healing? And you might say, well, I'm not up for running a marathon for World Vision. There are plenty of other ways to do that. There are other things you can do, and each one of us is called to be a part of it. No one of us is called to do all the things, but all of us can be a part of it and do something to bring about healing. And say, what would it look like to live your best life? How can I make a difference in the world today? You know, in the coming months, we'll have plenty of opportunities to do that. I can think of at least three that we regularly participate in. One is, it's been announced we're going to be helping the Muskegon Rescue Mission provide meals for people. That's a simple thing. But it's a part of living. Do we need food to eat? Or do we need food to live, I should say. We need food to eat. Yes, we need food to eat. We need to eat to live. We need food. And so part of it is saying, how can I be a part of that? Sometimes it's just, well, when I go to the grocery store, I buy a couple extra cans of whatever it is. We have our own food pantry here. And we help people and say, this is part of human flourishing. Maybe it's later on we have another one where we provide gifts for a family at Christmas time. We have Operation Christmas Child, where we send boxes around the world and make a difference in some children's lives and the long-term impact that that makes on people's lives. We can also work to say, what can I do to bring reconciliation among people? And so again, this is that picture of this final thing where there's these people and the kings of the earth are coming and going and saying, are there groups of people that I'm a part of, or are there individuals that I'm connected with where I can seek to bring reconciliation? Again, this kind of ranks up there with evangelism, something very few of us ever want to do. When you know a couple people who are having an argument, having a disagreement, there's a conflict between them, not many of us want to jump in the middle of that. But it's the work of Jesus. It's the work of reconciliation. It's the reconciliation between nations. It's praying for that and looking and saying, what's going on in the world? Where do I see division in the world? And I would suspect that all of us are aware of division in the world somewhere, somehow. Some of maybe within our own personal lives, maybe it's something we see in the news, and there may be some particular part of it that really strikes at our heart. Because I know this, the news can be overwhelming. We can look around the world and there's so much going on and stuff, but oftentimes what we find is there's one particular thing in the world that really strikes at. It might be the conflict in Gaza, it might be in Congo, it might be in Sudan, it might be in Syria, it might be in Venezuela. It might be in Baltimore or in Muskegon. There's some area where you see this, and you long say, well, I want to see reconciliation there. And maybe you can't be the one on the ground doing it, but maybe you can support, maybe you can write to someone, maybe you can pray about it to say, how can I bring reconciliation to the world? And we're called to be witnesses, speaking faithfully and resisting the dragon, the empire, and its effects, to evangelize, to witness, to act against injustice. So I invite you to look and see this picture of where God is taking history. This picture of human flourishing, this picture of reconciliation, this picture of peace, and say, how can that make a difference in my life today? What will it cause me to do? How can it inspire me to go and to share the good news of people, Jesus, with people? How can it inspire me to tell others about Jesus? How can it inspire me to act in my own life where my loyalties aren't divided, but where I'm living fully for Jesus and seeking to walk in his light all the time? What are the ways that I can act against injustice and problems in the world? Now, final caution with this, or final thought with this is this, that God alone is the one who will bring the kingdom in all its fullness. We can't do this on our own, but we can only do it by the power of the Spirit. So I'd say invite the Spirit into your life in those areas where God is calling you to do, where God is calling you to be a part of his work to bring about this thing. Now we know, again, it will only be fully realized in the future. It'll only be fully realized when Jesus returns again. But we can still continue to work with that vision, that picture in mind, to say this is where God is calling us to. This is God's picture of the future, and how can we begin to live it now? So may we, by the power of the Spirit, work with God as he brings about his kingdom. Amen.